Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
What we do.
Here's John Williams.
Each and every day, it's the John Williams Show. We are here weekdays from, let's see, 1 to 3, and then Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. It's WGN King John. Don't forget that podcast we do. It's called the Mincing Rascals. Do you listen to the Mincing Rascals? Had a different vibe to the Mincing Rascals this week. We record it on Thursdays. Usually runs about a half an hour. At the end, we always close with our recommendations. Our recommendations are sometimes the best part of the Mincing Rascals, although I think the first part is pretty good. The Mincing Rascals were judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago. They are this year's Lissagore Award winner for best podcast in the city, as handed out by the Chicago Headliners Club. The media in town said that's pretty good. What Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand and Christian McQuarrie and Patty Vasquez and Justin Kaufman and Scott Stantis and I do. L.F. Garris is the producer of that. Do listen to the Mincing Rascals. It's free. By the way, the recommendation for me at the end of the Mincing Rascals this week, Violetta, have you ever tried one of these? I don't know if Ryan's a drinker.
What's going on here now? Someone say my name? Someone offering something?
So at the end of the Mincing Rascals, we always make a recommendation, something we are reading, listening to, watching, eating, or drinking. Kristen McQuarrie's been pretty proud of her sort of shortcut margarita she does. I think it's tequila and fresca.
Hmm.
But a drink I just discovered, which I think is awesome for summer, is that Aperol Spritz, A-P-E-R-O-L.
Now, do you order that, or do you have someone else order that for you?
It sounds like a girly foo-foo drink.
It does. Yeah, I'm at the sports bar watching the Cubs, and I'll have one of those spritz, please.
So here's what it is. And you just go to your favorite liquor store, swing by Binny's or wherever you do it. And a lot of stores have this. You haven't been looking for Aperol, but you'll probably find it. It's like over where they have the mixers and sweet things. It's an alcoholic beverage. But anyway, you get yourself a bottle of Aperol, and it's kind of a light blush color, this liqueur. So you take three parts of Prosecco, two parts Aperol. So you got the sweet bubbly from the Prosecco. Then the Aperol gives it a little color and flavor. And then maybe a shot or a splash of club soda, just to cut some of the sugar, I guess. You garnish it with an orange. You serve it on the rocks in kind of a tallish glass. And the ladies like to drink it with a straw. And that is an Aperol Spritz. You will thank me if you have that. I'm just saying.
It's an aperitif in Italy.
Well, that's where we saw it. I said, Brenda, how did you discover the Aperol Spritz this summer? She said, when we were in Europe on a trip with Kelly Cruises, they were serving those everywhere. The Aperol Spritz. So I don't know if they make it the same way over there as we do here, but that's literally on the bottle, that recipe. This is not a commercial for them, but I'm telling you, that was some pretty good stuff. So that was my recommendation on the Mincing Rascals podcast, and other people had literature and things like that, but I thought I would throw that in the mix this week. So do enjoy the Mincing Rascals. We'll talk to Anmar Misra. He is the national coordinator of the National Cave Rescue Commission. Did you know there was such a thing? In 30 minutes, where will you be at 1:40? We will talk to him then. The president last night was in Montana. He was in Great Falls. He did another rally. He's trying to get a Republican elected to the U.S. Senate there. So he travels around stumping for candidates. I've been watching these rallies of his in their entirety the next day. Like, you'll get a snippet of it on the news. I don't think those snippets do the rallies justice. I literally think they miss the essence of them. They're comic romps in a lot of ways. Now, maybe the president shouldn't be comically romping about North Korea, but that's what we got in the White House. But it does seem to me to be a little out of context when you take what he says as a soundbite, 7 seconds that you'll hear. You almost need to listen to 7 minutes or the whole hour and 15 minutes of the thing to get a sense of what those things are like. It's not pretty, but there's at least some context there. So I have the luxury here of playing a couple of slightly longer clips. I'm only going to play two. I know that you may not want to hear these. I know that some people don't like the president's voice on the radio. That's not good for him or America, but I'm going to do it anyway because I think that this rally deserves just a broader airing. Incidentally, before we do that, I will mention this too. Newsrooms around the world yesterday observed a moment of silence at 2:33 in the afternoon Eastern Time on the 1 week anniversary of a gunman opening fire in the Capital Gazette newsroom. That would be in Annapolis, Maryland, where 5 people were killed. The American Society of News Editors and Associated Press Media Editors issued a statement calling for the moment of silence, saying the shooting tears at our hearts, tugs at our compassion, and calls forth our fears for the safety of all those on the front lines of truth, accountability, and journalistic pursuit. The Baltimore Sun Media Group, which owns that newspaper, the Capital Gazette, says they'll do a moment of silence on Monday as well. Yesterday, the Philadelphia Inquirer, CNN, NPR, and other newsrooms across the country, yesterday afternoon at 2:33 Eastern Time, observed a moment of silence on the 1 week anniversary of that. The president then, shortly thereafter, last night, had a few things to say about the media. And again, this is what happens when you listen to the full rally. It's not just a one-off. He actually has some things to say. And the way he says them is notable, too, isn't it? So here is Donald Trump. Elif, this will be Trump on media in Great Falls. I believe it's the second on your queue, right? Let's start with that one. Here's the president yesterday afternoon or last night.
So since the rhetoric stopped, you know, we had very tough rhetoric. Would you say that was a little tough, right?
He's talking about North Korea.
They said he's too tough. He's going to cause a war. It's too tough. Now they say he's too nice. He's too nice. He's too nice. I got along very well with Chairman Kim. I got along very well. That's a good thing that I got along well. Now, what hasn't happened in 8 months? In 8 months, first of all, we got our prisoners back before I even went, right? And I didn't pay $1.8 billion, by the way, in cash. We didn't pay $1.8, right? But we signed a wonderful paper saying they're going to denuclearize their whole thing. It's going to all happen. But now, you know, you're back. I was back, I think, 6 days. Why hasn't it started? Why? Mike Pompeo is over there right now. And they say, he, meaning me, these guys, the crooked press, they are so dishonest. They are so dishonest. They're fake news media. So what do they say all the time? Because I didn't give anything up. What do they say all the time? They say, he went there. I went there. I went to Singapore. We had a meeting. By agreeing to meet, you know, they can't come up with anything else. Like, I didn't give like Clinton and like Obama would have. You know, Obama couldn't meet. Now they say, well, Obama couldn't meet. They wouldn't see him. They wouldn't see him. They wouldn't see him. So I met. That's how we got beaten. Now they're saying it with Putin. Well, Putin is highly prepared. And Trump, will he be prepared for the meeting? Trust me, we'll do just fine. We'll do just fine. Fake news. Bad people. Even end up having a good relationship, but they're going, will President Trump be prepared? You know, President Putin is KGB and this and that. You know what? Putin's fine. He's fine. We're all fine. We're people. Will I be prepared? Totally prepared. I've been preparing for this stuff my whole life. They don't say that. They don't say that. And you really do. You really, and I'll tell you what. what? Because I see it. I see the way they write. They're so damn dishonest. And I don't mean all of them, because some of the finest people I know are journalists. Really hard to believe when I say that. I hate to say it, but I have to say. But 75% of those people are downright dishonest. Downright dishonest. They're fake. They're fake. They quote sources. A source within the Trump organization said. A source. They don't have a source. They never use names anymore. You know, in the old days, you have to use names. Jim Smith said that Donald Trump is a bad guy. They don't do that anymore. They say a source within the administration. They make the sources up. They don't exist in many cases. Anytime you say, you know, I saw one of them said 15 anonymous sources. I don't have 15 people in the White House. I mean, forget it. 15 anonymous sources have said all sorts of stuff. These are really bad people. But here's the bottom line. We're here. How the hell did we get here? Really? How did we get here?
You may be asking that question yourself.
How did we get here?
Yeah. So that's the president on the one-week anniversary of a mass killing at a newspaper in Annapolis. That was him at a rally in Great Falls, Montana last night. His lines about Elizabeth Warren also got more coverage, and he imagined what a debate with her would be like. I'll play that clip for you. And Ryan, maybe you can just add a little context, too, after the break. You've covered how many President Trump rallies, either as a candidate or as an incumbent, as a president?
Over a dozen, I think. I was just up in Kenosha with him last week.
Oh, for the
actually,
Wisconsin
the day,
rally?
Yeah, actually, the day of the Annapolis shooting. This happened before. This was when he was breaking ground on Foxconn. Yeah.
He was, at the Foxconn thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He talked a lot about that at the rally in Montana last night, how terrific it is. You know, there's a certain sort of pattern. Here's what he does. In this case, I'm proud to be an American. Lee Greenwood plays. He comes up. Somebody introduces him. He acknowledges the locals, the Republican Secretary of State, the Republican Attorney General in that state.
Just like Obama did. Obama would go through his list of candidates. Yeah.
This is what you do. I mean, you're here for a reason. And then he calls up the guy that's running for Senate there, the U.S. Senate. And that guy comes up and thanks Trump, says, do we elect a great president or what? Everybody cheers. That guy usually takes the stage for like 2 or 3 minutes and then they sit down. Then Trump, you know, he's just got so much energy and the crowd has so much energy for him. So then he does either a braggadocious joke or a self-deprecating joke. He talked about his health and he talked about his hair and he knows to mention Crooked Hillary. That's their cue to chant, lock him up, lock her up, lock her up, which they do. And then he kind of walks around the stage while that happens. The same exact formula that he used in South Carolina. And then he starts riffing on the day's news. Then he's like a late night TV comedian. He just starts riffing on the day's news. And there's a prompter there, but it's more stream of conscious than it is a teleprompter, right? He's reading a few lines from there and then he just kind of goes off on his thing. And they love it. So when he got to Elizabeth Warren, it was kind of predictable. You knew he would eventually get around to something like that. And he did in a minute. We're listening back to some of the president's rally in Great Falls, Montana. He spent a lot of time talking about the media. Even when he's talking about North Korea, he then ends up coming around to the media. When he talks about Elizabeth Warren, he ends up talking about the media.
No, when you see the Times, how dishonest they are, when you see the Washington Post, how totally dishonest, when we leave, and I actually say this, they are all doing numbers that they've like never done. When I announce, they are going to endorse me. Because if I lose, should I lose, or if I don't run, they're out of business. Who's going to cover? They're going to cover Bernie? Hey, they're going to cover, like, sleepy Joe Biden? They're going to cover Pocahontas? Think of it. She of the great tribal heritage. What tribe is it? Let me think about that one. Meantime, she's based her life on being a minority. Pocahontas, they always want me to apologize for saying it. And I hereby, oh no, I want to apologize, I'll use tonight. Pocahontas, I apologize to you. I apologize. To you, I apologize. To the fake Pocahontas, I won't apologize. No, it's causing her problems. You know, that name's good. Because now even the liberals are saying, take a test. Take a test. You know, I shouldn't tell you because I like not to give away secrets. But this one, let's say I'm debating Pocahontas, right? I promise you I'll do this. I will take, you know, those little kits they sell on television for $2? Learn your heritage. Guy says, I was born in Scotland. It turns out he was born in Puerto Rico, and that's okay. It's good. You know. Guy says, I was born in Germany. Well, he wasn't born in Germany. He was born someplace else. I'm going to get one of those little kits. And in the middle of the debate, when she proclaims that she's of Indian heritage, because her mother said she has high cheekbones. That's her only evidence, that her mother said she had high cheekbones. We will take that little kit and say, but we have to do it gently, because we're in the Me Too generation, so we have to be very gentle. And we will very gently take that kit, and we will slowly toss it, hoping it doesn't hit her and injure her arm, even though it only weighs probably 2 ounces. And we will say, I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian, you know. And let's see what she does, right? I have a feeling she will say no, but we'll hold that for the debates. Do me a favor, keep it within this room, because I don't want to give away any secrets. And the press is very honorable. They won't. Please don't tell her what I just said.
That is the President of the United States talking to a rally last night in Great Falls, Montana.
And oh, my gosh.
Shame on the people that were there. I've long said that the people that voted for the president, I don't fault, because none of us could have known what we were going to get. Those of us who didn't vote for him thought, well, it won't be as bad as it is. Who could have known? And I think the people that voted for him probably had an even greater reason to not think that he would be so cuckoo. They were going to give him a little bit of rope, but they didn't. None of us knew how crazy he was going to be. I don't blame the people that voted for him. But those people that are cheering on the hashtag Me Too and Pocahontas jokes, who are you? Who are those people? Ryan, you said you've covered a dozen President Trump events or more. How typical is what we've just heard?
You know what? They're there for the show. This is a show, and I don't want to equate it to. I don't want to equate it to a comedy show or some kind of wrestling show. But that's
it. Feels and sounds a lot like that. Content be damned, or context be damned. But it's. I think that's almost the most palatable way to package it personally. If you've got to internalize that and figure out what am I going to do with what I just heard. I think the easiest thing to do is tell yourself, he's a comedian. Those people were there for a raucous, fun show. And it was almost like he and those people divorced themselves of who that man on stage is. Never mind, he's not the president of the United States. He's not serious about anything. This is just shtick. Okay, Ryan, keep talking.
Yeah, and you know what, from our perspective, and I'm just kind of internalizing it from the media's perspective, is we watch that and it's like, okay, when can we use something that we can have for news,
right,
for the newscast?
What's
you know?
The soundbite there?
Well, what is it? And you know, it makes it difficult, and his job isn't to appease us, obviously, but does the message of this get lost? Does the message of who he is campaigning for in Montana get lost? Does this message when he's in Foxconn get lost?
There's no substance.
Because
he didn't say anything other than make fun of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the struggle we have, and you know, I mean, like I said, he's not there to appease us. This is part of the job, and we know going in there that he's going to point the fingers at us, and that's fine. I mean, it's part of the show.
Well, no, that's become part of the job, but the media has a job to do, and the president's job is to work for the people of the United States. He is here to serve Republicans and Democrats and independents. He's here to serve every man, woman, and child in the United States. That's his job. He is our servant. He's a politician. He got elected. He's working for us. We are literally paying the salaries of his staff. That's his job.
And can I just clarify, if the president is listening, the DNA test doesn't prove where you were born. It proves the heritage and where your ancestors could have been from. Okay, just
And I, by the way, also for the people who have pointed at the media and ripped on the media, I have loaned my phone cord out to about six people at these Trump rallies so that they could charge their phones. So, hey, we're fine. We're fine. The media's not the bad guy here.
You see, Jim Acosta from CNN was at the rally in, was it South Carolina? Maybe it was Wisconsin. And it was where they were saying, go home, Jim, go home, Jim. There was a woman there who had trouble standing or sitting, or there wasn't a chair for her. I think she just was a little frail. And he gave her his seat to her. And then she sits down. And then she says, thank you. And then she said, you know, and then he tells the story. He had a little dialogue with her. And then the people around her. And as it turns out, they were fine people. They liked Donald Trump. That's their right. But they weren't these sort of crazy, hateful animals that Trump is being. And I thought that was interesting, that maybe as individuals, these people might not be as awful in the crowd as they sound at a Trump rally. But I want to know who those people are. That's just nuts. You got to do the news. We'll pause here and do that. Afterwards, he's a spelunker. He is a cave expert. In fact, he is the coordinator of the National Cave Rescue Commission. Our guest, Anmar Misra, tells us what the position of those kids in Thailand is and what the hope is of getting them out. And this is John Williams. You know, they want to shut down the Dan Ryan. And by that, I mean some people. Not everybody wants the Dan Ryan shut down at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. We've been talking about that the last week or so after Father Flager mentioned that he would. Corey Brooks is an activist and pastor on the South Side who's been a friend of this show for a long time. I thought, I wonder what Corey says about all of this. It's trying to keep people in his neighborhood from getting killed. We'll talk to Corey Brooks. He's swinging by our studio in the next hour. Also in the next hour, fun things to do on the bright side of life. So as you've been hearing from Ryan and elsewhere, those kids trapped in that cave in Thailand have had some help, right? Some of the rescuers were able to get to them, but they can't bring the boys back because some of the passageway is now still underwater. It wasn't when they went through. Water got in there. It rained. It filled up some of the lower areas that the boys had hiked through. And now to follow the path that they originally came in, they've now got to be submerged. Some of the kids can't swim, and you would need scuba gear to do it anyway. That's how the rescuers are getting there. One rescuer has now died just going back and forth with oxygen and supplies. They're worried that there might not be enough oxygen in the cave.
Especially with all of those workers that are going back and forth. They're using up some of the oxygen as they try to pump oxygen in there. It's kind of a catch-22, I guess.
One of our listeners said yesterday, get that boring company. Get Elon Musk. He's going to drill a tunnel to O'Hare. Let's have him go straight down. And Elon Musk is now sending a couple of engineers. I don't know exactly what that means. You got to get some sort of contraption to dig a hole a half a mile down.
I think they'll take what they can get.
But yeah, Unfortunately, they don't have a lot of time. This isn't something that a bunch of engineers can sit back and do research on. You know, they don't have time for, you know, 6 months of research on how to do this.
Anmar Misra is on a phone line. Anmar is the national coordinator of the National Cave Rescue Commission. Anmar, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Just fine.
Where are you right now?
I'm actually in Bedford, Indiana.
You're doing some spelunking, some caving there, are you?
I just got done with a trip this morning, and as soon as I get done with you guys, I'm going on another trip this afternoon.
How hopeful or hopeless do you think the plight is of these kids in Thailand?
Well, I think there's a really good chance that they can all be gotten out safely. It's certainly not a guaranteed chance, and I think there's also a good chance that it may not be completely successful. So we always hope for the best. We try to do the best we can to do that positive outcome, but there is no guarantee here. If they can allow the water to get pumped down enough, if the weather holds so that they don't have enough rain to fill the cave back up again, the pumping that they've been doing has been being successful, then if they can get it done enough, then they can walk the boys out, which is the safest option. But if the rain comes in enough that it fills the cave up to the point where they were before is no longer safe, they may have to use the diving option. In that case, it's a much riskier proposition.
So then you're lowering, you're putting on scuba gear, a mask and your breathing device, and I guess you got a little headlamp on, huh? And you're just swimming and crawling through these crevasses and caves in underwater, right?
Sure. Well, it's actually, I don't need a headlamp in there because the visibility is basically zero. The cave is dark, but the water itself is so muddy and murky that having light doesn't really get you anything. So they actually navigate through the cave using a fixed dive line that the divers hold on to that have directional indicators as they go through. To let them know that they're going in the correct direction. And it's a very complex and very complicated process. And right now they've been training the kids. And even if they don't need to use the diving option, the very fact that they're training the kids gives the kids something to do, something that's concrete to potentially help them assure their own survival, which is very important for their morale.
Well, I don't know if that's encouraging or discouraging what you just said, but either way, they would be doing it blind. They would be doing it in black darkness, right?
Yep.
Have you ever been in a situation like this? I mean, you're in the United States. You've told me you've been in cave systems like this, but not this one in Thailand per se. What's your sort of personal observation about this cave they're in?
I've been in many caves that are very similar to that. Of course, as an experienced caver, we know that if we're going to go into a cave that has even a potential like that, that we do not even think about going in under those conditions. But also, there are some caves that cave explorers who know what they're doing and explore frequently, if they know that there's even a minor possibility that something like that can happen, they have much more preparation before they go in. In this particular case, this is a cave that's open to the public. They do tours through the cave, and the public is encouraged to go and self-explore. And they got unlucky in that the monsoon started earlier than they normally do.
What do you go ahead, Violetta. You had a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, why can't they just zip line the kids? You know, so they have a rope now that's from the starting point to wherever the kids are, correct?
Right.
And why can't they just...
It's not a rope. It's not like a zip line. It's a dive line, which is basically a string that the divers deploy so that they can find their way through the cave.
No, but hold on. I think Violetta's confused. But I think Violetta's confused because if you think a cave, you think of a large area with a ceiling that you could just zoom along, Violetta, if I follow your question. But the problem here is that it's not like that all the time. Some of it is it goes below the surface. It goes down, and water has filled. Think of a tunnel more that's completely flooded with water.
Right.
Isn't that it, Amar?
But can't they just drag them out?
Drag them out? Well, they got to breathe. How are they going to breathe?
With an air mask.
So they put the air mask on with the... Right, so they put a mask on, oxygen tank on the back, and we're just going to drag them out. Okay, how about that, Amar? How about we just... You kids don't need to be able to swim. Just don't take that mask off. Keep breathing, and we'll just drag you through here. What about that?
Well, think about this. They're going through an area that is so tight that some of the original divers going through had to remove their equipment to get through it. If anything happens to the equipment when they're going through there and the mask gets ripped off or the equipment fails, you have about a minute to fix the problem or perish, and you have to know how to be able to fix that problem. They will most likely help aid the kids along through some of the places in there, but there will be places where nobody else can touch them. They have to be able to get themselves through there, and even if they do attach lines to them to help pull them through those areas, you don't know what condition is going on because you can't see them. And so the very act of pulling them through some of those tight places may be
terrifying.
The thing that causes
just
the problem.
Terrifying.
Interesting.
So what about the Elon Musk idea about drilling a hole from the top and going down and getting them?
Well, that's not. I have great respect for Mr. Musk there, but it's not a unique idea to him. It's been used in many other types of rescue in the past. I think most people remember in 2010 the Chilean miners where they bored a hole almost half a mile down in. They had very high accuracy precision surveys of to where they were trying to drill to, and even then they started three simultaneous operations and only had one of them actually get to that point. This is a much smaller place because the gold mine that the miners were in, you could drive trucks through it. you can't drive, you can barely fit people through many of these places in this particular cave. And so you have to be able to know exactly where you're drilling to get to that point. And it's even then, even if you knew all that, even if you had all that, it was still took 2 months for them to drill the hole from the surface to get the miners out. And this is a very similar distance that they'd have to go.
Yeah. Okay, 312-981-7200. You know what I told our audience, Omar, because I think a lot of us, like Violetta, like me, like Elif, we've all been sitting there going, why don't we try this? What about this? Well, how about if they just do that, for God's sakes? If a diver can get there, if I can see video of these kids now, why can't we get the kids out? And I think these are all very good questions. We've got to kind of learn the situation and what has and hasn't worked in the past. Maybe you've got a suggestion, a comment, a question. That's why we asked Omar to come on. The phone number is 312-981-7200. John, you're on WGN. Go ahead. Hi, John. Are you there? The question was, at least from a caller who we don't hear from now, he wanted to know, why are those kids in that cave to begin with? I think we all know the answer to that. As you said a moment ago, right? It's open to the public. You're invited. Although that sounds like a bad idea to me. You said that there's guided tours, but you're also invited to just go exploring yourself. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's the case.
And do we have situations like that in this country? Are there caves where you can just go wander around?
There are, and those oftentimes are the places where we tend to have the most rescues.
How about it? This texter said from 847, how long does it take the diver to go from the boys to safety? So if a diver gets there and then goes back. I heard 2 hours. I don't know if that's 2 hours for the diver or that's what they would estimate the trip would be for the boys. I presume it's not 2 hours underwater. What do you know about the journey the kids would have to make?
So for the experienced divers, it's actually about 5 hours out. It's 6 hours in, but they're fighting the current on the way in. On the way out, the current actually moves them along a little faster. So you can use that as a baseline. The thing that you have with the water level is the more they pump the water down, the less diving that they have to do because more places open up. There's more air on the surface as the water level drops. And so the lower the water is, the less the diving is, which is good because if they do have to use that option, then it makes everything easier. Doesn't mean it's safer or doesn't mean that it's safe, but it is safer than it was. So you could say at a minimum, it would be at least 5 hours, if not more, for each trip out.
How long do you think of that would be underwater?
Not much of it, actually. If right now, my understanding is the level of the water has been pumped low enough that only a small portion of that would be underwater. They still have to swim a fair distance, which,
right.
You know, and that's a little easier because they can be towed along for some of that. But the other problem they're facing is that these kids face 9 days of starvation, and it takes a long time to even be able to start refeeding them, let alone getting them to the point where their strength is up. So, you know, a lot of them, when they first got found, could barely even stand.
Now, if the rains were to continue to come down now after they were pumping the water out, how long does it take to fill back up? Is that a quick process?
It depends entirely on how much rain they get. But it could easily come back up to where they were when they started pumping within a day or so.
Is there a concern that the chamber the kids are in would completely fill with water?
That's a very strong concern, and that's one of the reasons the diving option is being explored, because if they decide that that may be the case, then the only other alternative is the kids will drown. So you take the risky option, but that's better than the certain death option.
Steve, on line two, you're on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, King John. One thing that I was thinking about is, what about a positive pressure? Now, I know they can't GPS exactly where these kids are at, but if they could sink a 4 to 6 inch line, hook up a compressor, and keep like a positive pressure, kind of like a submarine would have, just to at least keep the water out.
Yeah, I see
where they're at.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Is that a plausible option in your estimation, Omar?
Not really. In a mine, like they did in the Sago mine disaster, that is a plausible option because the mines tend to be more sealed. Caves have natural openings and crevices all over the place, and that's one of the reasons that the air in caves generally tends to be a lot better than the air in a mine, is because there's a natural airflow. And even if there's not enough airflow to support, continued existence breathing for long periods of time, it's enough that pretty much as soon as you start pumping air into it, it's just escaping elsewhere. Further, in order to pump the air down far enough to have any significant benefit, the amount of pressure that they put in there, the big issue they had with the Sago mine, or it might have been the Cue Creek mine, I'm getting them mixed up, was that they actually had to put an airlock at the entrance of the cave, and the kids or the miners, they were fearing that they'd end up having decompression sickness if they brought them out too quickly. So there's all sorts of issues with that, aside from the fact that you simply cannot do it.
Yeah, right. The air would escape. All right. I'm Mar Mirza. He is the National Coordinator for the National Cave Rescue Commission. Today's Friday. Hopefully we'll have a more positive spin to this conversation, maybe next week. I'll ask you to join us again down the road. Thanks for your time this afternoon, Amar.
You're welcome.
All right. That's the latest on that. What a story. What can you imagine? 11-year-old boy doesn't know how to swim, told to put a mask on and an oxygen tank and submerge himself into the darkness and squeeze through passages that he can't see, following a rope. Unbelievable. Good luck to all of them, huh?
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
I'll tell you.
Here's John Williams.
Last half hour. No pun intended. Took my breath away, literally and physically. That's hard to imagine what those kids are going through, isn't it? We are here until 3 o'clock on weekdays, 1 to 3. Brian Noonan's filling in for Ro and Anna. He's so good he can fill in for them both. He'll be joining you at 3 o'clock. And I'll be back in the Skyline Studios, the Skyview Studios that our folks at Allstate sponsor tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. That'll be interesting because that'll be about the time that Father Flager's bus loads of people, 7 booked, an 8th is filling up now, will be trying to block the Dan Ryan to protest the violence on the South Side. So we asked a friend of ours who has a lot of activism and a lot of parishioners on the South Side. Corey Brooks is back in our studio. Reverend, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
What's the name of your church again?
New Beginnings Church of Chicago, and we have a great non-for-profit called Project Hood.
You and I first met when you were trying to get a building replaced or refinished, refurbished, right? It was falling down?
Yeah, we were trying to tear it down. We wanted to purchase it. It was a drug haven, a place for prostitution, an old motel. And so, that's how we met. We purchased that motel. And
but you were living on the roof of that
thing. Yeah, 94 days on top of the roof. That's right. And you gave it great coverage. And as a result, a lot of people from all over the place with WGN's help sent in funds to help us to purchase that building. And we purchased it and tore it down. And now we are in pursuit of building a wonderful community center that's going to cost around $23 million. And we're doing a great job raising money to build it. And it's going to be a fantastic place.
How much money do you need, Corey?
We need about
$22 million?
About 19 more million.
Oh, yeah. Really? But you've got four in the bank, maybe?
Yeah, we've got commitments. We've got commitments of upward almost to $4 million. And hopefully we'll get these new market tax credits. That's going to put us in another $7 or $8 million. And then we're like about $10 million away. So that'll be great.
So you're done. So you're there. Just
we're
10,
there.
10 more
it's
million.
Just a matter of a few more commitments, a few more people helping us out, and a few more people understanding why we're trying to build that community center on the South Side of Chicago where there's a lot of gun violence and what we're attempting to do. And people just believing in our vision and seeing what we're trying to accomplish and getting it done. And we're going
to
do it.
Two more things I want to catch up on before we go to the day's news. That would be tomorrow's protest. That is, then, you also organized a march from the South Side. Mm-hmm. That members of the Englewood community, your parishioners, WGN listeners, I was there, you were there, the Olins were there, some of my friends. Were all four kids there?
Yeah, all four kids were there as well. And
What were we marching for that day?
We were marching for peace and trying to get everyone involved in all hands on deck, trying to bring attention and awareness to the gun violence and making sure that everyone could play a part.
So then what do you think of Father Flager's effort to once again shine a light on this problem?
Well, first of all, I'm for everyone's First Amendment right. I think everyone has a right to protest or to bring attention to awareness to certain causes that help people. But, you know, he and I are different in our approach and so our motives are different. So you know, he's going to cut off the Dan Ryan. That's not something that I would do, nor is it something that I'm going to participate in. And it's just a matter of philosophical differences now. When we first started Project Hood, it was in the infancy of me learning about gun violence, me learning about all the things that were going on. And I've probably have shifted my view a long way from doing marches. You know, I don't think. Well, you know, for me, marches are not at the most. They don't do the thing that we need to happen in our neighborhood. We need to have a greater focus, I believe, on our internal issues. A lot of times, and in the early on, what I would protest, it was trying to get everyone outside of our community to pay attention to what's going on. But I think what needs to happen is more of a result of what needs to happen on the inside of our community, internal issues. And so I'm not looking for Superman to come in and save us. I'm not looking for Superman to send in the resources. It's just not going to happen. It has not happened. And as long as you know, you got the machine in place, you're going to continue to get what the South Sides and West Sides of Chicago have been getting.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, when I talk about the machine, I'm talking about the Democratic machine on the South Side and the West Sides of Chicago that have been in place, that have put us in a position. And by the way, I live on the South Side of Chicago in the heart of Woodlawn, where a lot of violence happens. And when I say the machine, I'm saying that there have been there have been systems in place that have caused our communities to have poor schools. So when Father Flager talks about poor schools, he is right. When he talks about lack of resources, he is absolutely right. However, the way in which I believe we ought to go about getting those resources and schools and things fixed, that's where he and I would differ. But the messaging, he and I both see the problem for what it is. It's just that we both see it for caused by different things and the solution being different as well.
Yeah. Are you a Republican?
I am. I'm a conservative.
Were you always? Were you always?
Always.
Because I remember when you came out on behalf of Governor Rauner, some of us were kind of scratching our heads. We didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Some of us worried that you were being played a little bit. Because
What people don't know is that I went to Ball State University, where David Letterman went to school. He's a famous one who's known for that school in Muncie, Indiana. And I graduated there with a degree in political science. And I remember my first political class, my first political science class, when they put up, this is Democratic values, these are Republican values, and they didn't have any name on them. They just said, these are values, these are values. And they went down those core values of what each party believed. And when they revealed the name of the party, I was like, wow, I have Republican views.
That was a revelation.
Yeah.
And for you, that's self-sustenance, not relying on others or the government to fix
free
the problem.
Market capitalism.
So when
absolutely.
You say you differ from Father Flager on how are we going to fix these problems on the South or West Side, where he may see a governmental solution or somebody else has got to come in here and fix it, you say what?
I don't see a governmental solution at all, especially as long as you have mostly of our community voting predominantly Democrat. There's no, they have no reason to do anything for us because they already have us in their things that they do. They have us cornered. And so as long as we have 95% of blacks voting Democrat, there never will be a governmental solution. Absolutely not. And so I don't see government as a way to fix my problems at all. Never.
We were talking about it on a podcast yesterday, and Scott Stantis, who's the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, he said, okay, they're going to march. What's their solution? And I think that dovetails nicely with what you're saying.
Right.
But I said, just because you don't have a solution doesn't mean you aren't genuinely angry about what's going on here. I understand how we've got to do something. And I'm sitting here talking to you on the radio. I don't know the solution to poverty or joblessness on the South Side, but I know that if those were white kids getting shot in the suburbs,
right,
there would be something would be going on.
Absolutely. And you know, that's the reason why I say, on one hand, I totally agree with Father Flager. He has every reason to be upset. I'm upset. I think anyone who lives on the south side or west side of Chicago, we're going to be upset about the violence and the poverty. There's no way, I believe, that you can live in those areas and not be upset. So he's rightfully has indignation for that. It's just that the solution and the methods, that's where he and I would differ.
Reverend Corey Brooks is in our studio. Talk about your personal connection to some of the violence on the South Side.
Well, you know, every single day we're dealing with issues where individuals are being shot and killed. There's not a day hardly that goes by that we don't know
Tell
someone.
Tell me a story. Tell me something that's happened recently that was personal or that was connected to you.
Absolutely. Well, recently I can tell you that across the street from our community center where we have a temporary building that Walgreens gave us, there was a shooting of a young man and right in front of the building. And it was the day before we were to have our grand opening. And so I'm thinking, here we are trying to bring something to the community to build economic wherewithal. And here's a person getting shot right in front of the building. That's pretty consistent. And in Woodlawn, unfortunately, over the last month and a half, there's been, I think, 10 shootings. There's been like 4 or 5 deaths. So,
you live in Woodlawn?
I live in Woodlawn.
Your family lives in Woodlawn?
My family lives
in
Woodlawn.
Your wife and 4 kids you raised in that neighborhood?
Yes, we're all in Woodlawn. And, you know, and I tell you, John, it's really difficult when my teenage son, who's a big boy, 6'3", about 200 pounds, and he's riding around in the neighborhood with some of the kids from the neighborhood, and a few days ago, we had to tell him he couldn't go pick one of the kids up because where that kid was, that neighborhood is a known gang area, and I just didn't want him to be, you know, even thought of as being misidentified. You know, it's real tough, and you worry about your son coming home, you're worrying about him driving in the neighborhood. So I know if I'm worried, I can just imagine how parents feel who don't have as much control over their teenage boys and daughters.
So if they block the Dan Ryan, do you think that's going to turn people off? Do you think it's going to be neutral? Or do you think people are going to say, this sucks, but better that I'm inconvenienced on the road than someone's shooting my kids? I wonder how Chicagoans are going to process that.
I think it's going to be both ways. I think there are going to be people who are going to be, you know, upset that the traffic is being stopped. But then you're going to have people who really have compassion toward what's going on in our neighborhood. So I think, you know, I think it's going to be a 50-50 thing. I don't think it's going to weigh heavy on either side. I do think John Cass wrote a great article in the Chicago Tribune about what was going on. And I do think that the mayor probably is more terrified than anyone.
Why is that? I saw the Cass took this angle, but talk to me about that.
Well, it shines for if Father Flager has this march on tomorrow, which it looks like he's going to have it, it's going to shine such a big light on the violence and such a big light on the lack of resources and the schools. And it puts the mayor in a tough predicament, especially when he's trying to avoid it. And especially when he does not talk about it. This puts him in a situation where he's kind of forced to have to deal with it.
Oh, well, now somebody's loving the closing down of the Dan Ryan now, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Corey, I mean, so you don't.
There are some people who are loving that is going
to
happen.
Well, I think I'm talking to one right now. You just a minute ago said you don't think this is the best idea. It's not going to fix the problem, but you're happy to put the heat on Mayor Emanuel, right?
I'm always happy to put the heat on the person who's in charge. I think the more you can get them to see your plight, the better off you'll be. And I think there might be just a little, you know, flexing by Father Flager to absolutely get the mayor to see what's going on.
Okay, but you're not asking the city or the state. You're not asking other people to fix your problem.
No, I'm definitely not.
But you're also mad at the mayor.
I'm not so much mad at the mayor because I don't support a lot of his policies because I don't think they're beneficial to our kids and to our neighborhood. But I expect that. I expect that from the machine. That's what you get. That's what we've been getting. So I don't expect anything else but what they've been giving our community.
Corey Brooks is in our studio. The number's 312-981-7200. I'm reading some of your texts. You want to join the conversation? You can call or text. Corey Brooks is in our studio. By the way, if you want to be more involved in the good work that he's doing in the city of Chicago, you should go to the website, which is projecthood.org. Projecthood.org. Corey is the pastor at New Beginnings Church of Chicago. He's had a long relationship with this radio station. Lots of calls and texts for you, Pastor.
Okay.
Kind of like how MLK and Malcolm X had different approaches. That's an interesting point, because I think a lot of us, seeing what Father Flager's trying to do, knowing full well it's going to tick people off, also know that Martin Luther King shut down a lot of municipal things. So you're more a Malcolm X than a... No, I don't, but I wouldn't say that. But how are you not subscribing to what at least...
Well,
Dr.
Yeah, Malcolm
King
X had
done.
Yeah, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, I identified with some of their traits as far as self-sufficiency, as far as even Martin Luther King, though, he was not trying to have a situation where we were dependent upon government to change our situation. He wanted government to change some laws, and so it's quite different. But I do understand Father Flager. It's just a matter of motives. Our motives are different, and our philosophical views are different, and the way we would handle the situation is quite different as well.
A couple of phone calls for you. We'll start with Mac. You're on WGN on line 5. Hey, Mac, this is John Williams. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, gentlemen. I got a couple questions and comments for Mr. Brooks. The first thing is, I was just listening to what you were saying, and your belief is that people shouldn't rely on government. We should keep government out of our lives. And I to some degree, I understand where you're coming from, but this is the issue that I have with what you're saying. You're trying to build a community center. You're trying to build something that will serve the people of a certain area. You're having a hard time raising money, or it seems that you're having a hard time raising money. It seems that it's taken a long time to raise the money to build the center.
Okay.
Now, it seems that you're trying to be very self-sufficient and do this strictly on your own. But maybe if you did use government the way government is intended or should be used, you would be able to have private funds and public funds go to building a community center, and just possibly it may be open, serving the community, doing the things that you want it to do.
Right. Well, first of all, let me say thank you, and I appreciate your concern, and I appreciate the way you asked that question. Let me just say, again, it's a matter of philosophical differences. I believe that as far as what we're trying to teach, our philosophy is not to be dependent on government. So we don't want any government funds. I do agree that government does have a role in helping the community and helping the people of the land. It's just that the philosophy that we want to get across is that things in our neighborhood can be accomplished without government. So therefore, we take the stand at Project Hood that we don't want the government assistance as it relates to building our building. And yes, it takes a little bit more time, and yes, it's a little bit more difficult, but I believe it's worth the pain. And so that's what we're going to endure, and we're going to build the community center, and it's going to be done without the help of government dollars.
Thanks for the phone call, John. This texter says, so what is his relationship with Rauner? You said that you're conservative. You were advising, as I recall, Governor Rauner when he was a candidate. Are you going to campaign for him?
Absolutely. I campaign for him now. I'm going to a lot of my conservative friends and telling them, the order of the day is forgiveness. And the order of the day is that, as far as it relates in our community, it's really important that we don't let the Madigan machine continue to be in play. So, yeah, I'm going to support Rauner. And I know that people have a problem with his immigration stance. And I know that people have a problem with his abortion stance as well. And so those are areas that I'm in conflict with him, too. But I still got to support him at the end of the day.
This texter says, if white kids were getting shot in the burbs, the parents would be marching down 294 out that way. And this texter says, please ask Reverend Corey how Governor Rauner has helped the area. You've had a Republican governor.
Yeah.
So how much good has that done, y'all?
So one of the big things that I believe that drives a lot of the violence is economic issues. And as far as it relates economically, I think that Governor Rauner has probably done better than any governor, making sure that African-Americans have access to state contracts. When he took office, African-American contracts were less than 1% of all the state contracts. That's totally unfair. And so he's put things in law. He's put things in play to make sure that African-Americans get opportunities and that they get the chance chance to get contracts, and therefore they will be able to hire people from the community to do work. And that alone is a big, big step. No other governor has ever done that in the history of Illinois.
On line one is Al. Hey, Al, jump in there. You're on WGN. Hi. Let me try it again. Hi, there you are. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to part of his comments, and it sounded like his analysis and of the problem is very similar to Trump's. When Trump bashes Chicago, does he say just about the same thing?
Sorry, I don't know what your point is.
Well, I think a lot of people do not take the violence issue seriously. At least that's what I've heard, and say that Trump is unfairly bashing the city when I think we really do have a problem. So I just want to ask him if he has the same analysis as Trump.
You like the idea of the National Guard, for instance, coming out?
No, I don't like the idea of a National Guard coming in. Trump, his reason and his analysis is purely politically motivated for Trump. When he bashes Chicago about the violence, it is not to put a light or to help Chicago. It's for his own political gain. Now, I don't have a problem with you using violence that's going on in Chicago, because it is a fact. If you're going to try to make sure that you put things in place that are going to assist. But if you're just using it for political gain and you're using it just for, you know, good TV, good media, that's not compassionate. That's not conservatism. That's not what any good Republican would do.
ProjectHood.org is his website. ProjectHood.org, the New Beginnings Church of Chicago. Pastor Corey Brooks in our studio will not be marching with Father Flager tomorrow. All right, Corey, my best to the kids. You got a kid that's graduating?
I got a kid that's graduating from Providence St. Mill, and a daughter that's graduating from Parsons in New York. So hopefully one of your listeners is out there and they're listening and help her to find a job, John.
Be a good taxpaying American.
Yes, a good taxpaying American.
That's my favorite kind.
Mine too.
We wish you nothing but he is what we call at my house in college jail. You
exactly.
If you got kids graduating from high school and they want to go to school after high school, you are now in college jail, my
yeah,
friend.
I'll be free for 6 months, and then my next one will go to college. So I'll get a 6 month buyout. So
I'll see you skipping down the highway or the sidewalk, smiling.
Yeah, I'll call you and say, do you want to go to lunch on me?
Nice to see you, Corey.
You too, John. Appreciate it. Thanks again.
A couple of quick texts from our listeners about the last half hour with Reverend Corey Brooks. John, your guest seems to be a hypocrite. He stated repeatedly he doesn't want or believe in government-based help, but he said he's clearly working on getting several million dollars in tax breaks and incentives. That's the opposite of not wanting or accepting aid from city, state, and federal government. And this texter said, I still don't understand how inconveniencing thousands of drivers is going to bring a cure. Well, that's why Corey Brooks doesn't endorse what Father Flager is doing tomorrow. I wonder what Thomas Jefferson would say about a situation like this. TJ is going to be on stage with me at the College of DuPage Saturday, August 18th. Where will you be? It's going to be at 10 a.m. at COD. It's really going to be a remarkable show. I'm always very optimistic about these things, depending on the news or politics of the day. We did our very first one. I forgot to look up the year, but it was the year that Walter Payton died, because I remember going home from the very first Thomas Jefferson show we did. I was listening to WGN Radio's coverage of the memorial service for Sweetness at Soldier Field. So there was Dave Ennett and Steve Bertrand and people like that, and they were all doing color commentary and telling us about it. It was somber and profound. And I was driving back. I'll never forget that. So however many years ago that
1999.
Was. 1999. All right, and this is 2018. So we are coming up on 20 years next year of these shows. We've done a couple a year, sometimes more than that. So anyway, Thomas Jefferson, you and me on stage. You get to ask him questions. I'll ask him some too. It's an unrehearsed thing. And tickets are available at WGNradio.com/events. Fridays at this time, we like to recommend some things we think would be fun to do. It's a segment we call Things That Are Fun to Do. What are we listening to here, Ms. Garris?
This is Radiohead, one of my favorite bands of all time. They will be playing the United Center tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30. Tickets start at $64 at unitedcenter.com.
Weezer's playing with the Pixies at Hollywood Casino's Amphitheater tomorrow, 7:30. Tickets for Weezer, LiveNation.com, start at $50. What have you got?
4th of July weekend fireworks continue at Navy Pier. That's tomorrow at 10:15. And who doesn't want more fireworks?
Yeah, they do them all summer long, I think on Wednesdays and Saturday nights.
Yes,
right?
But this is still going to be a firework experience. I mean, a 4th of July experience.
Oh, I see. Because
it's going to be bigger.
Because otherwise they're like 15 minutes, which is nice. To me, that's all I need. But Navy Pier, and I think they've got music that's synced up with it and all of that,
exactly,
too, right?
Yep, a whole presentation ready
for you.
So that's
tonight or tomorrow night?
That's tomorrow night at 10:15.
What else you got, Ms. Garris?
2018 Lake Fest at Water Tower Park in Island Lake features carnival rides, beer, a car show, and more. Festivities begin at 5 tonight through Sunday at 6 p.m. Tickets are $20, and you can get more info at villageofislandlake.com.
I asked our friend Polly Peterson for something fun to do because she's good at finding fun things to do. She said, hey, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5 is at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park tonight and tomorrow night. She also said one of our favorite festivals is Square Roots in Lincoln Square all weekend. There's a couple from the Petersons. What have you got?
15th annual Barrington Brew Fest is Saturday, 3 to 7. Tickets range from $50 to $80. It's over 20 different stands of beer.
What do you like, Ella?
Courtesy of Chicago Tribune's Jesse Rohde is the Smart Museum Family Day at the Smart Museum on U of C's campus. You can make waterlogged ink drawings with your kids tomorrow from 1 to 4. It's free admission and details at smartmuseum.uchicago.edu.
Irish Fest 2018 is at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Can you jig?
I cannot.
I can.
I don't want to. I don't want to be seen doing it. Let's put it that way. Tickets are $15 at the door. Festivities begin today, 6 o'clock. What do you like, Violetta?
Well, the world's largest basketball clinic is going on. It's going to be promoting health and fitness. All ages are welcome. That's Sunday at the South Lot on Soldier Field, noon to six, and it's free.
Everybody, do one more real quick. I'll go. Chicago Cubs are playing now at Wrigley Field, but the Cubs are in town this weekend. The White Sox are tonight at 6:35 here on WGN Radio. What do you like?
Styx and Joan Jett play Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northern Island tomorrow at 7. Tickets start at $24.
Naperville Rib Fest. A lot of music, a lot of food. Probably fireworks.
Hopefully no rain, finally.
Hopefully no rain.
Pitbull was last night.
I know. I'm so mad I missed him.
Steven Tyler is tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. Tonight, I think it's more country. I think Jake Owen's going to be there. So I might swing by there.
There's a few things we like to do. Okay, now we also like to do the bright side. That's where you call in. Tell us some good news in your world. Call or text right now. Here we go. All right, play the song, John. Here it comes. This is the bright side.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad.
Call me now. Here we go.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
312-981-7200.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Sing it home if you know the words.
Always look on the
bright. Hi, ladies first. Violetta, why are you smiling today?
Well, like I said, I'm going to Rib Fest tonight.
I think you just made that up, though, moments ago. Is that like a spontaneous decision? Or
no.
You've been planning on
going? I just don't share often, so.
Yeah. Violetta, is that you? How about you, Elif Garris? What do you like?
Radiohead tomorrow.
That's your bright side?
Yes, I'm going. I'm so excited.
My bright side is those Blue Cross Blue Shield commercials on TV where the guy is like castaway, Tom Hanks, stranded on an island. He's marking the days on this cave. And then suddenly a helicopter comes to rescue him after he's shined the sun off his Blue Cross Blue Shield card. And then he says, are you a search and rescue? And she says, no, at the resort. And he goes, what? Every time that commercial comes on, I smile. I would actually stop what I'm doing to watch that commercial. It's my bright side. Yes, that can be a bright side. Okay, let's start with Mel. You're on WGN. Mel, give me some good news. Why are you smiling?
Yeah, John, we got a wonderful neighbor named Jim who had a lot of medical problems and had his vocal cords removed. And this is close to a year ago. And he just recently had a procedure that had no guarantees associated with it. But today I went outside, he was walking the dog, and he talked to me for the first time in close to a year. And I was almost in tears.
That's what I'm talking about. What a great story. Thanks for the call. Our best to your neighbor. Tell him we said hi. Have him call in sometime. Now, that would be fun.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Hey, Karen, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, 20 years ago, I adopted two little girls from China, and we just went through a very stressful downsizing move. The whole time we listened to WGN, that's what helped us get through it.
What's your bright side now? Give me another one. Text line 312-981-7200.
630 says, my son has a show opening tonight in Naperville School of Performing Arts, West Side Story. 224 says, her granddaughters are coming to visit this weekend.
Hey, Brian, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to go for a ride in a B-17 Flying Fortress.
Oh, that's the one. Is that the one parked out at Valpo?
It was. It's going to be in Romeoville tomorrow.
Ah, so it's kind of flying around northwest Indiana. And
yeah, and they're getting up
Illinois.
In Wisconsin and stuff. And do you know where the term the whole nine yards come from?
No.
They're ammunition belts for their 50 caliber machine guns were 27 feet long, so they'd give them the whole nine yards.
Wow. Hey, have a great flight. Enjoy.
I will. Thank you.
Read another one, Violetta.
Well, we have 773 saying, bright side is my husband, myself, and our Cocker Spaniel, Darcy, just arrived home from an epic trip to Maine.
By the way, I'll go next to Lori. She's got somebody coming back. Lori, you're on WGN.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good. What's your bright side?
My son Brian is coming back from China tonight. We only see him once a year. He's 27 years old. He teaches social studies there. And we are so excited to see him.
Hey, Don, it's your turn. What's your bright side? You're on WGN.
I am going to be a grandmother. Two of my daughters are pregnant. So I'm going to be a grandma in November and December. Unfortunately, one lives in Montana and the other one lives in Hawaii, but it's exciting.
Sound like fun places to visit, don't you think?
Yeah, but I can't even imagine grandparents. But that's okay. It's a great blessing. We're excited.
When you're feeling in the dumps, stop.
I read another one, V.
My bright side is my daughter has been away from camp for 2 weeks, and I pick her up tomorrow.
I don't know if I said that the Bright Side Life is sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Props to them. Thank you for that. Hey, Sally, you're on the air. What's your bright side?
Hi, King John. Nice to hear your voice again.
Same.
My bright side is I watched possibly the shortest parade for the commemorating the bicentennial for Illinois today, but my two grandchildren were in it, and it was in Raritan, Illinois.
Enjoy!
That sounds like the best kind of parade to me. Your kids are in it. It's short. You're in. You're out. Everybody wins. How about you, Violetta?
630 says, I get paid for a 40-hour week, but usually only work 30.
All right. I presume that's from somebody working for the state of Illinois. Mario, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling?
Hey, John. About 2005, I retired, and I said, you know, I'm going to call you back one of these days and give you an update. And I just wanted to let you know it's wonderful having six Saturdays and one Sunday in your week. It's great.
You know, some people, when they retire, they're miserable. I'm glad to hear a good report back from you, Mario.
Sure. It's great. Thanks.
You're calling and texting 312-981-7200-V.
847 says she gets to see her grandkids, Nash, Oliver, and Otis, today. And then 630 says, I went outside and didn't melt, then went to the dog park.
On line two, I don't see a name here, but it says your kid was in college. Who is this? Hi, you're on the air.
This is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
How are y'all? My son finished his freshman year and got invited back next year. That's my bright side.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today?
I'm smiling because one of my best friends finally got his heart transplant.
It's a bittersweet moment, but he's been waiting for a heart at Loyola for the last 3 months, and he finally got one, and he's doing great.
Read another one, V.
First family reunion for 630 this weekend, and then also another text. I'm in the process of opening an Allstate agency in Elk Grove Village.
Hey, Sharon, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling?
Well, we're so excited. Our 18-year-old grandson is just leaving for boot camp for the United States Marine Corps.
Wow. Well, thank him for the service. What a commitment that is. What a good young man, huh?
Oh, he is so excited. He's been looking forward to this for 3 years. He's been working out and eating everything that he's supposed to eat, and he's raring to go.
Our best to everybody. Thanks for the call, Sharon.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, one more, Violetta. What do you like?
Well, not necessarily a bright side, but 630 wants to let everyone know fireworks were yesterday at Ribfest.
Well, that is a bright side because they actually had them.
Right. Yeah.
Remember? They postponed them.
They've been challenged over there this year. And as an owner of a couple of skittish dogs, anytime fireworks get canceled, that's my bright side. Or, you know, I missed them. All right, so that's what we do on Fridays. You call in, you tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling, and we smile with you. Hey, by the way, I'm on the air tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. We'll follow what happens on the Dan Ryan. We've got some fun segments we like to do then as well. V, thanks for helping us out on the bright side.
You're welcome.
Hey, John, some breaking news for you.
I'm
encouraging everyone to hug a Brazilian today. They are out of the World Cup.
Oh, wow.
Find a Brazilian, go hug a Brazilian.
Was that Belgium?
Yep. Eat waffles tonight. No steakhouses.
France did well, right?
France won.
My son is in a World Cup pool at work, and he picked France, like all Americans do, completely randomly.
Because he likes French fries.
With no knowledge of either of the, you know, any of the skills. So how many teams are left in this thing now, Ryan?
I think we're getting down to eight now, right? Or no, we were down to eight. We're getting down to four. We've got another two matches tomorrow. Sweden, England and Croatia against...
And where's America on this list?
No America.
America is watching.
No America.
America's
yes,
watching.
From the sidelines.
All right, I've got to stop talking. We've got Rokan and Anna DeVlanta's show ready to roll. Brian Noonan is filling in. He says hi in a minute.
We've got a lot to get to, as you can imagine. We're going to talk to Daria Aubinger from ABC News about the trade war that is happening with China. We'll get the weekend forecast to talk about the lakefront conditions with Skilling. We're going to give a family four-pack of passes to the Blackhawks convention at 6:20. We'll have live music from Rory Carroll. We'll talk, as you did, about the shutdown tomorrow on the Dan Ryan, and try to figure out why George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic are only getting paid $45,000 to play Taste of Chicago while other groups are getting double, triple, four times as much.
People get paid that much to play Taste of Chicago?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it either.
I mean, maybe that's not enough, but I'm surprised anybody's getting 45 grand.
Oh, some are making 150.
Really?
175, yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's not a cover band. That's George...
No. Well, right, but George Clinton, I'm thinking he's being paid the lowest, and he was really one of the few names that I recognized. So I was like, well, I wonder why he's not making as much as everybody else.
That may say more about you,
well, sure,
than about him.
Of course, it does.
Have a good show.
Thank you, sir.